Good morning, all. The first case for argument this morning is Urbania versus Central States. Mr. Cusack?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honors, Mr. Carey.
Matthew Urbania is a vested participant in the Central States Pension Fund. That means that he's got 10 years of vesting credit, and that means that he can't suffer a break in service because, according to their break in service rules, once you suffer a break in service, you cease to be a participant. He suffered an injury in 1982, 81, I think, and received Social Security disability benefits from June of 82 through November of 83. And then he continuously received them from May of 86 up to this day, Social Security disability benefits. He applied for a disability pension from Central States, and Central States, in their final denial letter, which is in page 36 of our appendix, the appellant's appendix, says, "You did not become disabled as defined by the plan until June of 1988, when you became eligible for a social insurance award." Now, it seems to me it would be pretty obvious that somebody missed the fact that Mr. Urbania was eligible for a social insurance award in 1982, in June. He got the money. And he, like a lot of people back then, was thrown off for one reason or another, went back and tried some trial employment, but it didn't hold.
Well, let me talk about this breaks in service. Under Section 3.05G, I want to know how, under that section, the clock could be stopped on breaks in service if the 1982 injury that kept him out of work in 82 occurred in the course of non-covered employment.
Well,
that was non-covered employment. Isn't that a problem?
No, it's not a problem. To start with, the plan simply says he will be deemed to have received vesting credit if he's not in covered employment for any one of these reasons, one of which is sickness and injury. It doesn't say you have to have left covered employment because of an on-the-job injury, because that's an entirely different set of circumstances, and what that requires actually is controlled by collective bargaining, requires under their plan the employer to pay actually another year's worth of contributions. But that has nothing to do with your vesting. The second thing is once Mr. Urbania or any other participant qualifies, once he meets that threshold requirement, he can't suffer a break in service simply because of the fact that his pension vests. It vests when he suffers the injury. It vests when he qualifies. That's the Music case out of the Ninth Circuit. They can't take it away from him. He could go become a high wire flyer at Ringling Brothers, and the most they can do is stop his benefit for the time that he's off, which is the Turner case. You go back to work, you lose that much benefit. But they applied a different rule in this case.
But did Music deal with non-covered employment?
No, it did not. No, it did not. This non-covered employment, I think, is a red herring in this particular case because the plan does not say you have to leave covered employment. It just says you don't have to be in covered employment. For example, a lot of people are injured and they can't drive a truck, which is Teamsters. They can't drive they can't pass an ICC DOT physical. It's not the ICC anymore, it's the DOT. And they simply get another job, and if that job doesn't pan out and they can't work on that, they qualify. You don't have to leave covered employment. Now, I concede that if you go on vacation, it would be ridiculous to say that. You can go on vacation, but you're not going to go on vacation from somebody other than your employer. The problem is it doesn't say you have to leave, and that's what the district judge interpreted that to mean. The last way you can't suffer a break in service is, according to the Reich case that this circuit decided, if you're vested and you can't suffer a break in service for vesting purposes, how can you possibly suffer it for disability benefits or purposes? And that was the Reich case. So you got three methods there by which you don't suffer a break in service. He's vested. He's a vested participant. Once you suffer a break in service, you're no longer vested. But right on page, 27, they send him a letter. You are a vested participant. From that point on, you can't suffer a break in service. And it's folly to say that you can't, whether you're in or out of covered employment. And even if you delay the onset of his disability benefits to this mythical 1988 date, he hasn't suffered a break in service. He certainly hasn't suffered three consecutive one-year breaks, even under the best of circumstances.
But the mere receipt of Social Security benefits is not dispositive here.
Well, apparently it was in the letter that they sent on our Exhibit 36. It says you didn't become disabled. It was dispositive for his disability in 1988. Why wasn't it in 1982? Why wasn't it? It wasn't because the plan reads in the alternative. It says all of the da-da-da-da-da. Or if you become eligible to receive and you don't get the certificate. It's in the disjunctive. Very clearly uses the word or. It doesn't use the word and. Now, it's important because of the fact that they keep saying totally and permanently disabled. You know, that's the mantra. But a Social Security award of disability doesn't say that you are permanently disabled. You only have to be disabled to get Social Security for a period which is expected to last more than 12 months. So it's an alternative. Either you qualify for a Social Security award and maybe not get the piece of paper, or you're totally and permanently disabled as defined by the plan. That's what they said in 1988 when they sent the letter, when they said you did not become disabled until you became eligible for a social insurance award. It was dispositive in 88. Why isn't it dispositive in 82?
But under Section 4.06C, doesn't that provide a more expansive definition of total and permanent disability, which was the way that the district court and the appellees interpret that section, so that the reason that total and permanent disability is there is because the statute requires it, and that's the correct interpretation.
I would agree with you, Your Honor. I would agree with the district court if the plan used the word da-da-da-da-da and qualify. No, it doesn't. It says or. And that's disjunctive. And that's where the trustees violated the arbitrary and capricious rule. They rewrote it to read and instead of what.
Would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty well done here. Yeah, I've reserved 4 minutes.
No, you've got plenty of time. But I just...
Let me see if I'm missing anything here, because I may well be done. The only other thing I can say is that if this plan was drafted poorly, it isn't the fault of Mr. Urbanian. And the final thing is that, you know, I had the same set of facts with Mr. Turner, where he went back to work. The plan does not say you have to stay disabled forever. He went back to work. They took 1 month's benefits on him for the month that he was back. Now they come in for this participant, and they come up with a different rule. Unless anybody else has any more questions, I think I am finished.
Not at this time. Thank you, Mr. Cusack.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Carey.
Thank you, Your Honor. Please, I'd like to start with Judge Williams' question, where she raised the issue of how you stop from suffering 3 1-year breaks in service as a result of Section 3.05G. The district court, I think correctly, said that you had to leave covered employment for that provision to protect you from suffering a break in service. It wouldn't, I don't think, make a lot of sense for a situation where somebody's in Teamster employment covered as this plaintiff was, and then he goes and works, leaves Ohio, goes down to Florida, works for about 10 months and suffers an injury. Under Mr. Kuzak's interpretation, he could never suffer a break in service. Actually, when you look at the summary plan description, which is also part of the record, it's bound together with the plan document. The summary plan description on page 61 of our appendix states that a break in service is determined according to the date on which you left covered employment and the period of time that you were out of covered employment. Then if you go down a little bit, and I'm going to quote from it, it says, beginning on January 1st, 1976, you cannot have a break in service or a one-year break in service because of an absence due to vacation, incapacitating sickness, or injury, or a disability. I think clearly that that's a portion of the summary plan description that's explaining Section 3.05G of the plan document. And clearly that when they talk about a break in service starts when you leave covered employment, and then when you go down the next portion of the provision when it says your absence due to vacation, sickness, and illness, and so forth, that protects you from the break in service, clearly the absence is referring to the leaving of covered employment, and that's the explanation of Section 3.05G. Mr. Kuzak made a big point of the fact that Mr. Urbana is vested, and indeed he has 11 vesting service years, as is stated in the administrative record, and indeed Mr. Urbana, upon attaining various ages, and he's going to be age 65 this July, I believe will have a vested pension benefit. There's nothing, he suffered no full break in service that would take away any vested pension he has. Mr. Bainey wants to make the argument. He wants to make the argument saying, well, I qualified for a disability benefit, ergo, I can never lose that disability benefit. I think that that puts the cart before the horse. As a matter of fact, the district court judge found that he didn't qualify for the disability benefits for the reasons that I'll address in a second. He never had the benefit. We're talking about apples and oranges here. We're talking about a vested pension. He has 11 vested service years. It's clearly stated in the briefs. And come July, if he wants to apply for his pension, he's going to get a pension of $179 per month for life. What we're talking about is a disability benefit. A fellow who in 1982, while he was working in non-covered employment, claims to have suffered or did suffer an on-the-job injury, and then stating that he qualifies for a disability pension from Central States, a pension that he actually applied for in 1998. I believe the correct analysis was right on by the district court. The district court really broke the factual situation and the legal principles down two ways. The district court first looked at what are the qualifications for this benefit. That's Mr. Kuzak's, I think, one of his biggest fights in the brief. He doesn't agree with the district court. The district court said that when you read the plain language of the plan, that it's apparent. The district court uses language that's evident from the plain language of the plan that there's four conditions for this disability benefit. The four conditions are that you suffer a total and permanent disability, that you have a Social Security award before 3 1-year breaks in service, and with 10 years of credited service in the fund. Now, Mr. Kuzak wants to say, no, the only qualification, as the colloquy with Judge Joe Williams, is that, as a matter of fact, the only requirement you need is a Social Security award, and I have a Social Security award. Mm-hmm. But that's just not true. That's not how the district court read the plan. That's not how the district court read the plain language of the plan. And, in fact, again, I go back to the summary plan description, which is also part of this. The summary plan description very clearly and unequivocally states on page, and that's on page 68 of my appendix, the summary of plan description states for the disability benefit you must meet, quote, each of the following requirements, and each is capitalized, as I point out in the brief. And then the summary, and the most telling thing, it seems to me that you need more than just a Social Security award to prove your entitlement to this benefit. The summary plan description on page 73, again of my appendix, says that when you file a claim for a disability pension, you need a position statement and, quote, also, close quote, a Social Security award. This means, I think, that the district court was correct, that in the factual, when you apply this to the factual situation, Mr. Urbana, he left covered employment or was covered under a Teamster contract in 1981. He moves down to Florida, gets in a non-covered job, suffers an on-the-job injury, and although sometime later he got a Social Security award dating back to the period of time from 1982 to the end of 1983, that nonetheless he didn't meet the other requirements. So that's why I say the district court did the correct analysis. The district court said, first of all, how many requirements are there? District court says four requirements. Then the district court said, did he meet these other requirements? And district court found that he was not disabled. Now, besides the evident language of the plan that these requirements that you have to be totally and permanently disabled and have a Social Security award before a 3 1-year break in service, which is a condition precedent, doesn't divest you of anything, it's a condition precedent to getting the benefit. When the union who filed the appeals, as you know, on behalf of Mr. Urbana during the administrative appeals process, filed the appeals, the union went and addressed each one of the requirements individually. Mr. Urbana, through his union, knew that there was more than one requirement going through the administrative appeals process. The union's appeals are on page 134 and 109 of my appendix. The Central States letters denying the appeals refer to the four conditions. The Central States letters said that, and I'm looking at page 112 of the appendix, to perfect your appeal to Mr. Urbana, you need to show that you were permanently and totally disabled before January 31st, 1983. That's when he suffered the 3 1-year breaks in service. So that's the first step of the district court's analysis. How many requirements are there to qualify for this benefit? The district court said four. Then the next issue is, did he qualify for the benefits? Was he had a Social Security award? That's one out of three. Did he meet any of the other benefits? And I think the answer is no. There's substantial evidence in this administrative record and evidence that the district court looked at length, as a matter of fact, in its opinion, that he truly was not totally and permanently disabled before the end of 1983. Now, as you know, as Mr. Urbana says, a Social Security award is something different than total and permanent disability. A Social Security award means you can't engage in gainful employment for 12 months. That's in the administrative record, in the administrative law judge's opinion. But Central States, in addition to that, demands that you be totally and permanently disabled. In a Central States requirement is that you can't engage in any gainful, you can't engage in any employment for life. His own doctor, Seminole Orthopedic, it's throughout the administrative record at least four times in 1983, and the district court judge pointed this out, said that he could go to work. He, as a matter of fact, when he was injured in June of 1982, he did go back to work in June of 1983, back to the same job at Page Jet Aviation and earned $500. It's shown in the administrative record, his Social Security awards. He worked in 1984. At the Loyal Order of Moose, as the district court pointed out, he worked in 1985 for this auto parts store, this Alexander Seawald, and he worked in 1986 when he suffered another injury and injured his back while he was hanging drywall at DJ's drywall. So not only was there the opinions that the district court pointed out, the medical evidence that he could go back to work. As a matter of fact, he did go back to work. The Social Security award that he finally received in 1998, and this is on pages, it appears two times, 128 and 203 of the appendix, stated that when Mr. Urbana finally went to the Social Security and got his final Social Security award, which was effective 1988, which was the date that Central States determined that he finally was disabled, that the administrative law judge and the district court pointed out that this was the date that Mr. Urbana told the administrative law judge he was finally disabled. Now, we have a situation that when you look at the totality of it, I think it flows and it's reasonable what happened here. The plaintiff left covered employment. He went to Florida. He got hurt. He got a workers' compensation award. He had workers' compensation through the end of 1983. He goes back to work. He works substantially in 1984. He works in 1985. He gets injured again in 1986. He gets another Social Security award. The administrative record shows he settled both of his Social Security cases. And then he gets injured again in 1986. Then he goes in and files for another for his Social Security award, and the Social Security award, based upon his testimony, the review of the record says, okay, you're disabled as of 1988. He had suffered 3 1-year breaks in service long before that. He'd suffered 3 1-year breaks in service at the end of 1983. He was out of covered employment. No contributions were being made on his behalf. He was earning no vesting service. Then he waits another 7 years, and he comes to Central States in 1998 and says, please give me my pension. In his application files, as a matter of fact, in his application, he said he didn't do any work since 1982, which, of course, wasn't true. He was working at all these places that the district court points out and that are in the administrative record. I'm on the white light here. I assume I'm at the end. If you're on
this, you've got a few more. I just have one quick question about that final claim denial letter that was issued, and you know it didn't cite insufficient credit service as a reason for rejection.
That's correct,
and
Your Honor.
So I was curious as to why that wasn't in there, because I think the reg certainly requires that. That it be specified.
I'm sorry for cutting you off, Your Honor. I think the answer is that when you look at the administrative record, and the word that the district court judge used, he said it was, quote, undisputed during the administrative appeals process. That was never an issue that the union raised. As a matter of fact, when you looked at both of the union's appeals on behalf of Mr. Urbania, both times, they said explicitly, and it's in the record, I can give you the page sites if you want them, they said explicitly, this man has 9.8 years of service. This is a hardship case. Why don't you let him make self-contributions to get the 10 years of service? So the union knew, and it was apparent during the administrative appeals process, that he didn't have the 10 years, and that was, as the district court says, undisputed.
But that, okay. But you didn't include it in your letter, though?
Didn't include it in your letter, Judge, because I don't think there was any dispute. When you look at the administrative record, it shows 9.8 years. It was not an issue raised. The union or Mr. Urbania didn't say, that's wrong. I should have 10.5 years or I should have 11 years, 12 years or something like that. They assumed that as a condition predicate of their argument. Their argument was that this man is disabled and he should get the benefit.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Carey. Ms. Cusick.
Your Honors, there were three levels of administrative appeal. After the first letter, the issue of insufficient credit died. They never mentioned the pension fund, who's got to tell people by law what the problem is, never brought it up. We're talking about 2 weeks of contributions here, maybe three at the most, that would have cured that problem. And there's lots of ways you can cure it with Central States. You can make self-payments. You can get pre-contributory credit for traditional Teamster work. And they just let it drop. And then when we get to the district court, then they come back and they blindside us.
So did you ever raise it in the proceedings prior to the district court?
I did not represent anybody.
Counsel for Urbania. It was not raised. And
it was raised by the union. Mr. Urbania said, we want to make self-payments. There's a letter in there that said, when we get your Social Security report, we'll let you know. They never let it do anything like that. And we're talking about $18 here, maybe.
But he never disputed the 9 years the 9.8 figure.
I don't think it's up. No, he didn't. They didn't dispute it. Yes, he did. As a matter of fact, he says, "I think I'm entitled for credit as a laborer. I'm entitled to credit as a brakeman. I'm in traditional stuff, and it's in there." And they said, "No, you can't have that credit, but we'll let you know." And I think it was the Mary Ballant letter was the Benefits Claims Review Committee that brought it up. But the important thing about this vesting is the Reich versus Laddish case. And if I may read what this court said, if I can find it, because I just lost it. If I was better organized, I probably wouldn't have these problems. It basically says that if it's not relevant, if a break in service... All right. If a break in service is not relevant to Reich's status as a participant for deferred vested retirement benefits, for example, it is not relevant to his status as a participant for disability retirement benefit. Mr. Carey just said he's eligible at age 65 for a vested retirement pension. Why is he not? Why is the break in service suddenly relevant to this? Either you've got a break in service and you're no longer a participant, or you don't have a break in service and you're a participant. If he's vested and he gets the vested pension, this business about the 3 1-year breaks in service, you don't even have to count. Once you're vested, you can't get a break in service. And that's the long and the short of it. That's where the district court was wrong. Now, we can talk about in or outside covered employment. We can talk about all kinds of things, counting. It's right there. It's the law of this circuit.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cusack. Thank you, Ms. Carey.